Hola a todos, bienvenidos. Gracias por acompañarnos. El día de hoy tenemos un programa extremadamente especial. Tenemos como invitado de honor a Edwin Black, junto con Francisco, con Francisco Gil White. El día de hoy el programa será en inglés, para poder tener la conversación con Edwin. Y entonces ahorita cambiaremos al inglés. Les agradezco a todos por apoyarnos. Por favor, denle like, compartan. Esto es lo que nos hace llegar a muchísimo más gente. E igual les recuerdo que tenemos el jueves el evento presencial en Ciudad de México. Será a las 8 de la noche, el jueves en la noche, en la zona de Santa Fe. Pueden ver aquí en la descripción la información para obtener sus boletos. Ahí es donde tendrán la oportunidad de convivir tanto con Edwin como con Francisco en persona, hacer sus preguntas. Eso será, toda la sesión serán preguntas del público en una audiencia bastante reducida para que todos tengan tiempo de comentar. Igualmente, en ese evento, el evento será en inglés, sin embargo, contaremos con traducción simultánea, ¿no? Entonces podrán estar, si tienen algún problema con el inglés, todo se transmitirá simultáneamente en vivo para ustedes en español. Igual pueden hacer sus preguntas en español para que el idioma no sea ninguna barrera. Los invitamos y nos encantaría verlos ahí. I'll switch to English now. Edwin Black, it's an honor to have you here. Welcome to the show. We've been eager to have you here for a while now.
And it's a pleasure to be here and with you in Mexico City.
Thank you. Edwin Black is, on our opinion, probably the most important historian on the last century. He has written multiple books translated into 20 languages or more, some of them bestsellers, including IBM and the Holocaust, War Against the Weak. Many of you have heard on this channel Francisco talk a lot about the eugenics movement. All this work is based on Edwin's work. No, he did the actual groundwork on all the investigative research that laid the foundation for a lot of Francisco's work and research. And so we're very, very pleased to have Edwin here. And he has been an ardent fighter against anti-Semitism for many decades now, and one of the leading figures on this research, development, communication, and dissemination of this very important information on the day that we're today. And Francisco, you already know him on this channel, and I'm really excited about this conversation. There are a lot of things where both of you agree and have a little bit different perspective, but there are others that you don't know. So I think it's going to be a very interesting conversation. So the format for this show is gonna be, I'm gonna be asking a question that's gonna be the same question for both of you. First, I'll give the floor first to Edwin, where he'll have 3 minutes to answer uninterrupted, and then we'll switch to Francisco to answer the same questions. We'll do a brief summary of the answers, and then we go to the next question and switch up the order. So if you're ready, we're ready to start this conversation.
Ready.
So on the topic of the risks of a new Holocaust and the rising anti-Semitism, both of you have mentioned that we're at risk of a new Holocaust. Edwin, you have a show on this, the second Holocaust, Serious. Francisco, your book is called The Next Holocaust and Its Consequences, that's subtitle. What I want here for both of you to answer is, why do you consider that there's this risk of a new Holocaust so present, and especially at this moment? Edwin, you go first.
Well, first I'd like thank you for that excellent question. I'd like to remind everyone that the Holocaust was a 12-year process that built on centuries of fierce anti-Semitism and violence against Jews, and it was profoundly international. It wasn't local. It was just across the continent, and indeed, not only the European continent, but the American continent as well. So we know that the Holocaust had six phases: the identification of the Jews, the expulsion from society, the pilfering of their assets, the ghettoization, the deportation, and then even the extermination of the Jews. Now, in World War II, this was accomplished through the offices of IBM, working with other companies like General Motors, which of course provided the trucks, and pseudoscientific organizations, NGOs, nonprofits like the Carnegie Institution and the Rockefeller Foundation, which provided all the academic, pseudo-academic support. I think that we've all been seeing this. We've been to mention the term, and now we see the violence is breaking out. We see that Jews are being hunted in the street. The Jews are self-ghettoizing, meaning, well, we don't go to this university anymore. We are being tracked. So one, we have been identified. They know where we are. They have mapped us in our synagogues and our grocery stores. Two, they're doing everything they can to expel us from organizations and polite society. Three, they are pauperizing us through the expulsion. And so, for instance, a person like me, and indeed Francisco, can no longer lecture at many universities. Four, eventually, and what they're saying now is Jews out. And Jews are congregating in the communities. They're self-deporting themselves. And the fifth, of course, would be this this ghettoization. And if you think about Israel as our refuge, and people say, let's go to Israel, and then what happens? There's this combination of forces that wish to destroy Israel.
Great. Francisco, now you go.
Okay, I understand I have 3 minutes, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so throughout history, century after century, as the people who've listened to me know, the great power of the moment is always persecuting the Jews. This is very, very consistent. It's a very strong correlation. So we see it with the Greco-Macedonians, then the Romans, then the Catholic Inquisition, then the Russian boyars, the German Nazis, and finally, today, the jihadis. Now, it appears that we are having an exception in the present moment, because a lot of people believe that the U.S. power elite is pro-Jewish and pro-Israel. But I don't think that's true. I think, as I have been documenting, that the U.S. power elite has actually been anti-Israel. We will talk, I think, in the next question a little bit more about that. But the point is that there's a consistent pattern. And the nature of that pattern, as I have tried to explain, is that the people who are trying to make everybody a slave, in other words, those who want to enslave all of us, always target the Jews first. They always go after the Jews first, and with greater violence against the Jews. And I think that consistency can be explained by the fact that the Jews are the people that taught Westerners how to fight oppression. The Law of Moses, which is the body of law around which the Jewish civilization was constructed, is a law that it was born, according to the Jewish tradition, in a slave revolt. Okay, so the entire point of Jewish law is to make sure that people can live freely free of oppression, with their individual rights respected, because this is the law of the escaped slaves. The Israelites were slaves of the Egyptian king, right? And they managed to escape to freedom. So of course, once they escape to freedom, what they create is a revolutionary law designed to protect everybody's rights and to fight against oppression. And that's the reason that the powerful people who want to make everybody a slave see Jewish civilization as the enemy, because if they don't extinguish those ideas, and in order to extinguish those ideas, they try to extinguish the people that transmit them, right? So if they don't extinguish these ideas about individual rights, loving your neighbor, fighting for freedom, fighting oppression, and so forth, then they can't enslave all of us. So what we're living through today is a new cycle of a very, very old process. And it's important to realize that this is always going on, because if we manage to survive the present crisis with something like our Western democracy still relatively intact, then it's important to create an institutional memory so that we don't forget that this always returns. The reason the Jews keep getting killed century after century is that they manage to convince themselves that it's over, that the last great attack was the last one. And so they're always surprised when the power elites organize a new genocide. So what we're seeing today is we're seeing today is that the great empire of our time, which is the United States, or the United States power elite, has actually been instrumental in making things easier for the jihadis, who are the new let us say advance guard that is organizing the new genocide. So we can talk about the details of how this was done a bit later, but that's the situation I see happening. It's a new cycle of an eternal process.
Okay, so what we have here is that you both think that we're at a very high risk of a new Holocaust. Edwin is mentioning that if we look at the Second World War and the Holocaust, actually, it didn't start with death camps. It was a process that went through different stages. And right now, we're seeing those stages, no? And basically, we're arriving almost to the fifth stage, that we're almost on the brink of expulsion. We've already been identified. There's this voluntary deportation, ghettoization, where we have seen it, no? In Europe, people just fleeing from France, from Germany, where universities. And what Edwin's saying is we just have to look at the last time what happened and the stages of what we went through, and we're already into those stages, no? So it's a process that has already started. That's what I'm getting from Edwin. And what I get from Francisco is deeper back in history and saying, oh, this is a very repetitive process, where the empire in turn the elite want to govern in a way that takes away civil rights and liberties, because they want to amass more power for themselves and want to govern in a tyrannic way. And Jewish thought, the people and the culture, has always been a force against these movements of tyranny. And that's why every cycle, we have the empire in turn attacking the Jews in one way or another. And in this instance, the US, the most powerful empire right now, it presents itself as a friend of Israel and a friend of the Jews, but that's not really the case. No, that's basically Francisco's argument. Okay, now moving on to the next question about the Palestinian state and its threat to Israel.
There is no such thing as a Palestinian state.
The idea, the proposal of a Palestinian state and why it's a threat to Israel and the Jews. So here is, some argue that establishing a Palestinian state is essential for peace. However, you both have stated that the Palestinian Authority and Mahmoud Abbas, his leader, pose a serious threat to Israel and the Jewish people. Why do you see this as this threat as so significant? And what are your views on whether a Palestinian state should be or should not be accepted?
So who is this question for?
Francisco, now you go first.
Oh, okay. So, well, the reason the Palestinian Authority is so dangerous is that the Palestinian Authority was created with the express purpose of murdering the Israeli Jews in genocide. The Palestinian Authority is really PLO, Fatah, or the PLO, if you will, but the controlling organ of the PLO is Al-Fatah. And Al-Fatah was created by Haj Amin al-Husseini, who was the founding father of the Arab-Palestinian movement. Husseini is also one of the top leaders of the German Nazi Final Solution. And so what Husseini did after World War II, he spent the war in Nazi-occupied Europe. He was made a top Nazi by Adolf Hitler. He was given his own bureaucracy. It was called Bureau des Gros Mufti. And he was very active in Nazi propaganda and also in the administration of the death camp system with Adolf Eichmann. So this is the creator of Al-Fatah. Al-Fatah then swallows the PLO between 1968 and 1970. And since then, the PLO is basically Al-Fatah. They are the ones who call the shots. So Al-Fatah, an organization created by the butcher of the European Jews, Haj Amin al-Husseini, was created obviously with the purpose of continuing the mass killing in Israel. But if you needed any more details to diagnose the intentions of PLO Fatah, you could just look at what they did after in the post-war, because PLO Fatah was responsible for the Iranian jihadi revolution of 1979. They spent the 1970s in Lebanon, and they had training camps in Lebanon where they were arming and training Ayatollah Khomeini's guerrillas, who are the ones who fought the Iranian revolution. And after Khomeini was installed in power, PLO Fatah was invited over to Tehran. Yasser Arafat and Mahmoud Abbas were invited to Tehran to celebrate with Khomeini the triumph of the revolution. And they announced from Tehran that PLO Fatah and Iran would work together to exterminate the Israeli Jews. They announced that in public, right? Now, most people don't know any of this, because the media has cooperated to keep it submerged. But it's not exactly a secret. After World War II, there were two entire books published on Haj Amin al-Husseini, one by Maurice Perlman, another one by Shechtman, I forget his first name. And they detailed everything that he had done. At the time, immediately after the war, Husseini was still world famous. People knew what he had done. But then, after 1968, more or less, precisely when Al-Fatah was taking over the PLO, all mention of Husseini was practically erased, and the next generations never learned of him. The same thing happened with PLO Fatah's role in the Iranian jihadi revolution. In 1979, the role of PLO Fatah in that revolution was explained on the front page of the New York Times when the revolution happened. But just a few years after that, again, it was entirely submerged, and academics and the media collaborated to never mention this again. So by the time the Oslo process got to bring PLO Fatah into Israel, almost nobody remembered any of it. And so the media were able to set Westerners, Israel Jews and diaspora Jews, on the claim that supposedly had changed its stripes and it would no longer be a terrorist organization and it wanted to negotiate peace in exchange for territory, etc. Of course, it is a lie, but the context of the peace process is that this organization, which is obviously allied with Iran because it created Iran, was given strategic, militarily strategic territory of the Jewish state. Judea, Samaria, and Gaza are militarily strategic. So we now have a terrorist group dedicated to the extermination of the Israeli Jews, sitting with limited autonomy, but sufficient autonomy to do great damage on militarily strategic territory of the Jewish state. I can think of no greater attack against the Jewish state, which was created to protect Jews from genocide, than to bring an organization allied with Iran, which wants to repeat the Holocaust and descend it from the original Holocaust into strategic territory of the Jewish state. So I think we have to be very worried about the Palestinian Authority, and it's one of the main reasons to think that we are in grave danger of a new Holocaust.
Okay. Now, thanks, Francisco. Edwin, what are the threats you see from the Palestinian Authority and from a Palestinian state, and what are your positions on its establishment as a state?
Well, thank you for those remarks from Francisco. I'd like to go back a little bit and just say that whatever Francisco said in his first comment about the coming Holocaust was profound. It was very deep, should be considered an important warning. But one of the most important things he said was every time they get over it, they say, okay, we're done. That's it. We're safe. Even when the Jews escaped from Egypt and they crossed over, they danced and said, okay, everything is good now. We're in the land of, we're going to the land of milk and honey, and everything's going to be okay. And this causes me to address your question. What would be the future, the benefit, the threat of a Palestinian state on the West Bank and potentially adjacent to Gaza? Here's the reply. Forget about it. It's not going to happen. It cannot happen. There was a period of self-delusion, which is part of what Francisco was talking about. Okay, we can get over this now. Self-delusion, where the Jews of Israel, along with leadership, mistakenly thought they were in Midtown Manhattan instead of in the Middle East. And so, yes, they cut this deal with the Palestinians, so-called land for peace. However, despite all of the PA's screaming that Oslo is no longer in effect, despite their unwillingness to agree to, as Yasser Arafat refused, even 102% of a land swap, whatever happened on October 7th was the final act of fate. And there is no Palestinian state to be established on the burnt bodies of babies. The Palestinians, wherever they exist, in the West Bank, so-called, or in Gaza, if they remain there, will be non-sovereign. Wales is non-sovereign. Scotland is non-sovereign. There are many nations which are non-sovereign, and there will be no Palestinian state, but I'm happy to discuss the matter 50 years from now when we get over exactly what they did to us on October 7th.
Okay, great. So, Francisco, first, what you said is that the threat really comes from the Palestinian Authority and its origins and its ideology from conception and all the way around has been one of genocidal against the Jews, no? And it was an organization that was created to destroy Israel and to kill the Jews by And it was an ideology created by Ajamin al-Husseini, who worked with the Nazis on the death camps. And then they destroyed, they showed even some decades later where they helped create the Iranian regime, Islamic regime, and they promised together to destroy Israel. No, so what you're saying is that their intentions have been clear since the start, that they don't plan to get land to live in peace. They want to destroy Israel, and their talk of peace is just a strategic move to get into the land and be better able and better positioned to attack Israel. No, so that's why they can't be allowed in Israel and given any more power, and we need to get rid of them because they're just playing us by all their talk of peace, and they just want to destroy us, and we just need to look at their actions and their whole ideology since conception. And Edwin, what Edwin's saying is, first of all, well, he mentioned how we Jews are quick to want to forget the risks of anti-Semitism and attacks. And there has been many times where we do, and we can't allow that to happen. No. And Edwin, what I get from you is that at some point during the Oslo peace process, we thought we were leading and negotiating with regular, like, Western people, no, as you said in New York, no, with someone that just wants the best for himself. And we thought that, oh, maybe if we were deceived into thinking that maybe if they have a piece of land and they live well, they'll give us peace. But what you're saying is that now, and especially after October 7th, it's just so clear that we can't allow that to happen, that you're not even worried about the establishment of a Palestinian state, because we have, like, the demonstration of their intentions, at what they're trying to do and what they have done is just so clear that it can't be even an option right now. If that's okay. And then if we go to a third point, and I think this is a very important one, and where you both have been at the forefront of this, Edwin, as a pioneer, is on the US, both US government, US corporations, and wealthy financiers' support for anti-Semites, terrorists, Nazism. Here the question is, the US government, and mostly its people, have historically presented themselves as Israelis, Israel's ally. However, you both have pointed out that has not been historically the case, and they have supported terrorist jihadist factions and states and movements on different manners. And here I want both of you to give us a bit of light on this, and show us what are the clearest evidences of the US supporting jihadist states, supporting anti-Semites that you know of.
All right, I'll go first, but I must say, Ricardo, these questions of yours, each one needs an entire hour and an entire show. So we'll get back to that. Here is where I'm going to diverge from Francisco's thought. He was absolutely correct about the historical nature of the so-called friendly administration in the United States toward the Jews. Do not think that. Remember, United States would have never entered the war if Japan had not bombed Pearl Harbor, and then Germany declared war on us December 10th, a few days later, and that put us in the war. Not one concentration camp was liberated. We celebrate the liberators, but actually they were going somewhere else, and they accidentally came upon a concentration camp and said, what's in there? No railroad tracks were bombed. There was no effort to resettle refugees. The Jews were turned away, and the leaflets were not, the leaflets saying, do not harm the Jews. Millions were printed, none were dropped. The world knew what was going on in the concentration camps, not only from the newsreels, not only from the December 1944 warning to the world that we will prosecute for extermination, but even the newsreels of the Russians as they came across in December, liberating Majdanek and others, putting out the newsreels and the film. And the reason that I, on the Edwin Black Show, which anyone can see at theedwinblackshow.com, started a series called Kristallnacht 2.0 and the Farhud and Yom HaShoah, Can It Happen Again? And now I've coalesced all of those into my notion of the Second Holocaust, was because, yes, so many elements in the United States were deeply embedded in the Biden administration, and they were, and I and others were predicting that if the Democrats won again, the Jews would be looking at a second dispossession, a second Holocaust. But the train was halted.
Okay.
Donald Trump.
Okay. Great. Well, we'll touch into Donald Trump later. I'm sure that's going to be very interesting.
That's the answer to your question.
Great. Francisco, what do you, if you want me to repeat the questions, what Please. Are the clearest evidences of U.S. Support for anti-Semites and terrorists, and a demonstration that they have not really been allies of Israel?
Right. Well, I think that Edwin Black's research is actually quite eloquent on the question of the true position of the U.S. power elite versus towards the Jews and towards the Jewish state, because what Edwin Black has documented, and he will forever remain a historic figure because of this, is that he showed us that the entire process in Nazi Germany would have been impossible but for the support that the German Nazis got, and before the German Nazis, the German eugenicists got from the American eugenicists. So the top industrialists in the United States, principally the Rockefeller and Carnegie networks, although of course there were others involved. And then there's also the involvement of IBM in the technical details, the information processing details required for the Holocaust, right? So all of that, and Edwin was mentioning other stuff that's very important. So for example, they never bombed the railways going to the death camps. They never dropped the leaflets, like he said. I think those are very important observations because they're all consistent with a general attitude in the U.S. power elite that was very favorable towards the extermination of the European Jews. And in fact, in the middle of the war, mid-level functionaries of the Treasury Department produced a document called The Complicity of This Government in the Murder of Jews. And that document, they documented in that document all of the things that the U.S. government was doing that were assisting the mass killing of Jews in Europe. It's a very damning document. So we have all of that happening during the war. After the war, there's also very damning evidence. For example, as historian Christopher Simpson documented with a bunch of stuff that he obtained through the Freedom of Information Act, at least tens of thousands of Nazi war criminals that were part of Adolf Hitler's intelligence infrastructure in Eastern Europe, in Fremde Heer Ost, Hitler's Eastern armies, all of that was absorbed to create the CIA. And the people in charge of the process were once again the Rockefellers, who were essentially running the CIA through their friend and retainer, Alan Dulles. So there's a consistency there during the war, after the war, and then also before the war, because of the entire eugenics movement was happening before the war, and it was creating German eugenics and fostering and nurturing the growth of German Nazism. So there's a continuation. Now, what could you expect from these people in the post-war? Well, I think that what you could expect is the Oslo peace process, so-called, because what they did was introduce into the Jewish state, which, because that's a diplomatic process that was created by the U.S. So they forced Israel to accept a terrorist group that was created by the leaders of the Nazi Final Solution to continue it in Israel. That was done by the U.S. And there's no arguing that the U.S. didn't know what it was doing, that the U.S. bosses didn't know what they were doing, because I was able to document the origins of PLO Fatah in 2 weeks, and also the role that PLO Fatah played in the creation of Jihadi Iran, which means to repeat the Holocaust. So the policy, there's many other policies I could mention, but that's the most important one. The policy of U.S. bosses in the post-war has been the destruction of the Jewish state. So Edwin believes that things have changed with Trump. I disagree. I don't think that anything as powerful as the U.S. deep state would allow Trump even to take office if he were not part of their team. And I think that the early signs the Trump 2.0 are in fact consistent with continuity. And the details we have seen that suggest otherwise are just a lot of management of reality. And when you look at the broad panorama, what we have is more attack against Israel. Israel is still in grave danger, in my opinion.
Okay. We'll get into the topic of Trump later, so you'll have plenty of time, both of you, to discuss on that. But I want to touch on what you both mentioned up until Trump, because there's the disagreement. But I think before that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I see that there's mostly plenty of agreement between you guys about how, since early 20th century, the U.S. government and U.S. Corporations and financiers pushed and helped Nazism and eugenics that became Nazism. And then, as you mentioned, Edwin mentioned clearly that even the show, when we now think that the U.S. entered the war against the Nazis and fought to liberate the death camps, but that really wasn't what happened. No, the U.S. didn't have any intention to fight the Nazis. That just happened because they wanted Japan attack the U.S. And
I'd like to offer a little bit of context there. So when people learn about World War II, they learn almost nothing. But the model they get, what ends up being lodged in their heads, is the idea that the U.S. defeated the Nazis and liberated the Jews from the death camps. What actually happened is that the Soviets defeated the Nazis. And in fact, the invasion, the Allied invasion via Normandy, they didn't even begin to plan that, not even begin to plan it, until 2 months after the Soviets had demonstrated that the Nazis had lost the war after the Battle of Kursk. So this is strongly consistent with the idea that they were not actually interested in defeating the Nazis. The problem the U.S. bosses and British bosses had is that the Soviets had already defeated the Nazis and they were rushing to the Atlantic. So they invaded via Normandy to at least get some part of Europe for themselves. But if they had really been interested in defeating the Nazis, they would have invaded much earlier. And if they had been interested in saving the European Jews, they would have bombed the railways to the death camps and so forth, as Edwin Black mentioned. So it's important to keep in mind that there is now well-researched historical
work that shows that during the war, the same people who created eugenics and nurtured German Nazism from the United States and Great Britain, they were also sending financing, war material, and other supplies to the German Nazis during the war, even after Pearl Harbor, right? So the entire picture is consistent with support for Nazism rather than enmity with Nazism.
Okay, so here the key point is we saw during the Holocaust and the decades before that the U.S., both the U.S. government and its main big corporations didn't have any interest in stopping the Holocaust, in stopping the Nazis. And they, in fact, many of them financed it and kept on supplying and facilitating their work. And what you both also are saying, that after the Holocaust, that really didn't change. No, the ideology is of what happened and how the US government conducted itself in this manner didn't change. No, there's a disagreement on if things change with Trump. We'll get into that later. But at least until Biden administration, I see that you have an agreement that really didn't change, and they kept on pushing and helping anti-Semites. And then before we go to the next question, just a quick reminder to everyone, as Edwin mentioned, this topic gives us, like each topic can give us for hours of conversation. This is trying to do a brief summary of great work by both of those amazing personalities. If you want to be involved in a deeper conversation, a conversation where you get to ask the questions, where you get to actually meet these modern heroes and talk to them, ask your questions, have a picture, whatever, you can see us on Thursday, Mexico City, 8 p.m. All the details are here in the description. And thanks everyone for their support. Like, share this video, and all the members that are supporting us economically, and that's how we are able to do these events. No, and we're selling for the Thursday event. We're selling the tickets. This is to recover costs for us. As you all know, this is a non-profit where all the income goes into producing more content. We need to pay for the cost of all our team to have all this production, these events. None of this is free. And thanks for your support is that we're able to do it and we'll continue doing more. Now, before one last question before we jump into Trump, the hot topic, is about anti-Semitism and its role in power. I think both of you, Fran Francisco, you mentioned more about how anti-Semitism has been used by power elites, like in all history, as a tool for oppression and to fight the culture that wants to liberate us. Edwin, you have documented vast amounts of information about how major, like the major billionaires in the West, Rockefeller, Carnegie, Ford, and corporations, IBM, governments like the US in the West that are supposedly in favor of democracy, have supported these anti-Semites, no? And supported the Nazism and pushed eugenics. So I see a joining line between you guys that says that there's a reason, there seems to be a reason of why the power elites keep going back to anti-Semitism in its different forms. And I want to know each one's opinion on why do you think this is such a recurring process, and we keep we Jews have to keep reminding ourselves that the threat is never gone, and the next one is coming for us, and why this keeps happening. Francisco, your turn to go first.
Well, I think it keeps happening for a number of reasons. One is psychological. So the most pathetic desire of ordinary Jews is to live a normal life. And one can understand that. I mean, why wouldn't you want to live a normal life without everybody trying to kill you? I mean, it's natural that every time the great killing is over and it seems like the world has learned and you're back into some modicum of peace and so forth, naturally the Jews want to believe that it's all over, that the next generation won't have to worry about another genocide. So that's the psychological reason. And because there is this deep desire to live a normal life, the Jews can be manipulated into thinking that they are finally getting that because they desire it so strongly, that you can dangle a few lures in front of them and they'll bite. Another reason this happens is that the media and academic system is controlled, and it produces a false reality. Jews can be, as I said, manipulated into thinking that the danger is over. And finally, the third reason is that the people running not only the state of Israel, but the Jewish communities and the diaspora don't defend the Jews. They just don't. If they were really defending the Jewish people, they would have created a very well-funded scientific effort to understand anti-Semitism and to get ahead of the next great mass killing. Instead, they keep telling Jews not to defend themselves, to lower their heads, to cooperate with the anti-Semites, to make the anti-Semites happy. They make them believe that the dangers are over. I think all of it combines to making Jews think that the great danger is over. Every single time. And right now, I believe the same thing is happening to Edwin Black, with all due respect. I believe that the faith that many Jews are now placing in Trump is a repetition of this effect. So Trump has been dangled in front of the Jews. He is the new lure. And Jews are being made to believe that Trump is their savior. And therefore, as Edwin Black just said, that the danger of a Holocaust is now over because Trump is here. I believe that's entirely false. It's just a repetition of the same process by which Jews are manipulated every generation.
Edwin, if we can skip Trump to the next question, that's going to be.
Let's skip Trump for a while. Once again, Francisco really nails it. He really nails it. And our problem is we don't have more Edwin and Francisco, okay? We are the tall trees in a field of intellectual saplings. So he's right. It comes down to one word: assimilation. We'll assimilate. We'll wear the same clothes. We'll talk the same language. We'll do the Zelbazach, the same thing, and then we'll build a, we'll have our communities, and if they're in Mexico City, they're armed fortresses. If they're in Montreal, they're under constant attack right this minute, fire bombs. And the reason is because the Jews are simply unwilling to face the facts that people like me and Francisco and you and others have faced. And primarily, and I've lost my timing here, so I'll make it brief. Primarily, it's about a lack of historical understanding. And this is advanced by exactly what Francisco was talking about: a corrupt media, false narratives. Remember, you think fake news started in an election a couple of years ago. The Jews have been living with fake news, the protocols of the Elders of Zion, and before that, the poisoning of the water, the drinking of the blood, to make matzah, the use of Christian babies to make matzah. These were all the fake news that were able to justify the innate desire to get rid of the Jews. What did eugenics do to Hitler? Eugenics medicalized German anti-Semitism and elevated it to raceology, to science, of course, a pseudoscience. To make this one remark, you're asking profound questions. We're answering them in 3 minutes, but this is the art of leaving out 99.9% of everything. So we haven't even touched on important little things like General Motors, Standard Oil, and 151 American corporations that were doing their best to make sure that their investment in Nazi Germany survives.
Yeah. No, and this is, as you said, it's very profound topics that there's really no time to cover them all. And I hope this works for the audience to get a taste of the information that's really important for you to know, to understand, to be able to fight this. And we'll get links for the books, Edwin's books, Francisco's articles, and please go and dive deeper, no? And we ask the audience.
I have books too. They can find them at managementofreality.com. And in fact, they touch on all of the topics I mentioned today.
Yeah, so please go dive deeper. Both we have this on our YouTube channel, Edwin Black's show, if you prefer video. So both of them have produced enormous amount of content. So that's really important for all of us in Western society to understand, not just Jews, but all of Western society, because this is an attack on all of us. So this is the way we fight it, no? And that's what I'm getting on this question from both of you, is that we Jews want to believe that the danger is over, no? That after all this suffering, okay, now we can live in peace and we'll try to be good, no? Like, we'll try to just make peace and do what they ask of us, and then they leave us alone. No, if we stop being weird, or we stop, like, we just align to what's going on, they'll stop hating us. But that's really not what happens.
If I can offer a comment there, Ricardo, the way this works is that Jews are made to believe that anti-Semitism is a consequence of their behavior. And therefore, if they change their behavior, anti-Semitism will go away. But anti-Semitism has nothing to do with what the Jews do or do not do. We have many, many demonstrations of this, but the most dramatic one was when Israel removed itself from Gaza. That was supposed to be a demonstration of the willingness of Israeli Jews to live in peace. We're going to let the Arab Palestinians, you know, have their self-government experiment and so on. We'll take the Jews out of Gaza. We will demonstrate that, you know, we'll do it unilaterally, asking nothing in return, so that they can see that we really want peace. We'll get this going. And not only was Gaza turned into a terrorist nightmare to destroy the Jewish state, but the entire anti-Semitic structure keeps blaming Israel for what the terrorists do from Gaza. So that's a dramatic demonstration that anti-Semitism is not a consequence of what Jews do or do not do. Anti-Semitism is a consequence of a propaganda system that is always operating regardless of what Jews do.
Yeah,
and if I could just inappropriately add, this harkens back to the Herzlian concept. Anti-Semitism exists where we exist. If we're not there, then there's no anti-Semitism. Let's get out of there. But what does Francisco do? He says, hey, remember, 800, he didn't say this, but he knows this, 850,000 Jews were summarily expelled simultaneously from all the Arab countries in full public view. They're not there. So 99.9% of them are all gone. We're gone from Gaza from 2005. And it comes down to this one sentence. There is no compromise in a religious war. Face it for what it is. This is a religious war, and the only way that we can survive is peace through strength, and do not leave the back door open.
Amazing. And I think what you, as you said, there's nothing on the behavior of the Jewish people, of the state of Israel, that can stop anti-Semitism. On this way, and that's not the cause, no? That's what I'm getting from both of you. And what I also see both of you arguing is that the real cause of anti-Semitism is, Edwin called it a fake news, and fake news going back centuries, no, from the blood libel to modern times. Francisco calls it management of reality. But basically, I think you're talking about basically the same thing, no? You're selling us a false narrative on what the Jews are doing, what's their impact on society as a whole. And they have been used to divert attention, to get people to fight them, and as a tool from the people in power. And basically the most important thing that we can do to fight it is speak the truth and fight these propaganda machines, fight these fake news, this management of reality, and have more Franciscos and Edwins, more management of reality getting to everyone. Have the Edwin Black Show seen by everyone in the West. And not just that, but more people doing and talking and doing this research.
Well, hey Edwin, with cloning technology, we might be able to do it.
Yes.
Well, we better hurry.
Yeah. So, and that's also what I want to say to the audience. That's the key part, that you can really fight this. And this fight is not necessarily, it does involve guns, but for you, it doesn't have to. Just by informing yourself, by sharing, by investigating and growing this and talking to the circle that you have, that's how we can change things. And now, going back to the hot topic between you guys, Trump. We already seen a bit of your positions. Basically, you both are deeply worried about anti-Semitism, about a new Holocaust, about an attack on Israel. And you both have argued that the US government has not really been an ally of Israel, and we can't depend on them, and they have even helped our enemies. But now we have Trump. Trump has just gone into power, and Francisco believes that nothing has changed with Trump in power, and Edwin believes that everything has changed with Trump. The train has halted, as he said. So I want first, Edwin, if you can explain why do you say that things have completely changed with Trump?
Well, I prefer to be second, but if I'm first in this discussion,
well, I can go first if you want.
I would prefer that.
Okay. Sure. So the reason I don't think anything has changed is that we've seen these kinds of phenomena before. So in intelligence circles, they call this a limited hangout. A limited hangout is when you hang out to dry some revelations that are embarrassing and scandalous about misdeeds, you know, that the U.S. government had been doing. And because these things are exposed and confessed, the public gets the impression, oh, well, now we know the truth. When in fact, what they've been shown is the very tip of the iceberg. The rest of the gigantic iceberg remains submerged. And it remains submerged in part because the tip was revealed, and that convinced everyone that that was the whole thing. So then nobody thinks about the entire structure that they haven't heard about. So examples of this are the church committee in the 1970s which did expose a great many misdeeds of the CIA. But what it didn't do is reform the CIA, nor did they expose the corruption of the CIA, of the media and academia. That was suppressed. Even though it was documented by the Church Committee suppressed it. It did not become part of the official report. We saw it again in Iran-Contra. Iran-Contra once again documented not only horrible misdeeds of the U.S. government, in particular, that the U.S. government was sending billions of dollars via the CIA to Iran, right? Billions of dollars in armament to Iran, the country that promises to repeat the Holocaust, right? So that was done by Reagan. That's Iran-Contra. But the Iran-Contra investigators also found that the Reagan-Bush White House with the CIA had created an entire system called, the acronym was SLPD. It stands for State Department Latin America Public Diplomacy or something like that. It was a cover name. And they were using that thing for corrupting the entire system, all of the media and academia. So they were back to their same old tricks. That part of the Iran-Contra congressional report was also suppressed. People didn't learn about it. And the CIA was not abolished. Nothing was really reformed. In both cases, the Church Committee and the Iran-Contra investigations, nobody went to jail. Nobody was prosecuted. The only exception is Oliver North in Iran-Contra, but even his conviction was vacated. So there was total impunity for this, no zero reform. So, of course, the system is the same system as before. Now we're having a limited hangout, in my opinion, with USAID and with the other audits that they're doing. But mark my words, they will not abolish the CIA. And the CIA has authority in the National Security Act to do basically anything they want in secret, to spend the money of U.S. taxpayers in secret. So once again, my prediction is people will get the impression that the system was cleaned up, but nothing really will change. And since Christopher Simpson documented that the CIA is basically a bunch of Nazis, we shouldn't expect their foreign policy to change. Now, about Trump specifically, Trump has said some things about Gaza that sound vaguely pro-Israel. It's difficult to evaluate. But even if we were to accept that everything Trump is doing in Gaza is pro-Israel, which I think is very difficult because the ceasefire that he imposed on Israel basically forced Israel to lose the war. But even if we were to concede Gaza, the greater panorama is very worrisome. Trump is very friendly with the people running Qatar, with the Al Thani family that owns Qatar. And Qatar is Qatar is the country that attacked Israel. Qatar is Hamas's daddy. So how can it be consistent for Trump? Just to give that example, I could give many more. But how can it be consistent for Trump to have an intimate alliance with Qatar, which he intends to continue? That's what he said. He received the Al Thani family in his home in Florida. And then he said that his relationship with Qatar in his first term had been very good, and it would be even better in his second term because the Al Thanis, according to Trump, want peace in the Middle East. So how can it be consistent for Trump to have an intimate alliance? We've got the biggest U.S. military base in the Middle East in Qatar. That's CENTCOM headquarters is Qatar. So how can that be consistent with defending Israel when it is in fact Qatar that attacked Israel? Or to give one more example, how can it be consistent with a pro-Israel position when Trump says that he doesn't want to attack Iran, he wants to have a diplomatic solution with Iran, instead of supporting Israel and joining Israel in the destruction of the terrorist infrastructure that Iran has created to destroy Israel?
Okay. Edwin, your turn.
I like Francisco.
Well, I'm on your side.
It's like this, guys. All the stuff that Francisco was saying was from a different era, does not apply. It's like this. You guys are circling the stadium, trying to pick up on what the shouts are, trying to figure out what's going on, and I'm in the dugout. What does that mean? That means I am in continuous minute-to-minute contact with the inner circles of the Trump regime and those who expect the Trump regime to do things right by the state of Israel and the Jewish community in the United States, which are two different but intersecting factors. The proof is in the pudding. What has happened over the years is that the American government has lied and pretended to be a friend of Israel, but set it up for annihilation and allowed the worst sources to rise to power within the anti-Semitic community to destroy the Jewish community from within. All that stopped on noon on January 20th. For Francisco to blame Trump for an Air Force base that I know well, that the British and the US used the largest base there, although there's Djibouti as well, for a base that was created years ago, to blame Trump because he welcomed a mediator and said, oh, they're great guys. And then if they don't pay any attention, if they don't do what he wants to do, all of a sudden they're not his buddies. I mean, there's a huge misunderstanding. What's important is that in the first hours and days of the Trump administration, the anti-Semitic agitators on the campuses have been identified. They're in the process of being deported. I've documented that. They put the single most pro-Israel team together in the State Department and throughout the United States government, and the deep state and the CIA that he is talking about has been dismantled and is being dismantled right this minute. Thousands of people are being put out of a job, and he's got Tulsi Gabbard coming in there to take it apart. He's got Kash Patel coming in there to take the FBI down. He's got the CIA, Radcliffe, his own people are coming in there to dismantle. And so these complaints of Francisco that were relevant prior to January 20th are no longer relevant, should not be considered. And in point of fact, a guy like me says the proof is in the pudding. I'm cross-examining, as is the entire Jewish defense establishment that I'm in touch with on a minute-to-minute basis, and Francisco is actually part of some of our groups. We are cross-examining every statement, every comment, every proposal, every action. And so we're watching. And if we see something not going our way, then we're going to act. But what is happening? It's all going our way. Baruch Hashem, we've got a guy who's finally standing up for Israel and allowing Israel to stand up for itself and standing up for the Jewish community. And people who drive around the stadium should not try to tell the people in the dugout what's going on in the playing field. Okay.
So here what Francisco is arguing, that the real power in the US government comes actually from the deep state and CIA more than the sitting president. And he called it, what he's saying is that Trump is basically something that can also be known by as controlled opposition, no? Where the people are demanding a change on policy and the people running things don't really want to change policy, but know that they have to give something to the people, an appearance of cleaning corruption, no? An appearance of giving them of a change on policy. And Trump is basically playing that role, but he's not really doing any real change. He's just doing the appearance of doing some change. He's doing some things, but the most important things he's not doing and he will not do. And we'll get to predictions for the last question. And one of those things is the CIA, no? Mentioning that the CIA is the agency or the or institution within the government that has the most power. And he's predicting that Trump is not going to do anything to dismantle them. And until he does that, there's no real change. On the other hand, Edwin is arguing that Francisco is seeing things from outside. And he doesn't really, he's not really seeing what's happening inside the administration, inside the office, inside the dugout, as he mentioned. And Edwin has direct contact with people within the administration. And he's been examining what they're doing, what they're planning on doing, the people that's been put in charge. And he has complete confidence on the route they're taking. And that, I mean, it has been, he has done some stuff and it has been less than a month since he became president, and things have really changed, are indeed that trajectory of change. And he's having inside information, if you will, until what's happening. And if something were to go the other way, he'll shout and say, okay, we did something, there's an issue. But so far, everything's going the way he wants it, with the full support from this administration to Israel. If that's a good summary of the position on both of you. And for the last question, I want to get into predictions and to challenge a bit your position, both of your position on Trump. And here the question is, Francisco saying nothing has changed and the U.S. is not a real ally of Israel and it doesn't matter that Trump is in power. Edwin says everything has changed and now with this administration, we can trust for U.S. full support on Israel. Here my question is for both of you, and we'll start with Francisco, is what would make you change your mind? So, Francisco, what does Trump need to do? And if you can maybe list a couple of things during his administration or in a set period of time for you to change your mind and say, you know what, Edwin was right and Trump really has our backs.
Okay, so first I'd like to make one comment, which is that it is never adaptive to trust bureaucrats, to trust the people who run a government. That's never adaptive because power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, so, as Lord Acton famously said. So, and it is even less adaptive for Jews to trust the people running a government. So even if Edwin was right that Trump is on the side of the Jews in Israel, it would be maladaptive to believe it. What is adaptive is to hold Trump's feet to the fire and make sure that he doesn't betray us. And the way to do that is to be always skeptical of every move he makes so that he doesn't feel like he has any freedom to betray us. So whether or not Edwin is right about Trump, I think what is adaptive for ordinary people, ordinary Westerners, and especially Jews, is to be always very suspicious of the people running government. That's the first thing. The second thing is that it certainly looks good. It does look good that Trump is performing an audit of the government. It has a very positive appearance. And especially, it has a very positive appearance that he is trying to fire the entire workforce of the CIA. That has a very positive appearance. However, the fundamental problem is that if he doesn't abolish the CIA, he's just going to fill it up with similar people, in my opinion. But in any case, even if they are very different, the CIA will have the power to do anything it wants in secret. If you don't abolish the CIA, if you keep the National Security Act intact, then the CIA will continue to be a tool of totalitarianism, because what a secret service does, what a clandestine service does, is it allows the bureaucrats to circumvent democratic processes. And as Maurice Joly explained, Maurice Joly is my favorite political theorist. He's a theorist of the 19th century. He was writing immediately after the formation of the French Second Republic. And what Maurice Joly explained is that if democratic citizens allowed government to spend their money in secret, if we allowed intelligence services with clandestine powers to spend our money in secret, then inevitably democracy would be destroyed, because those clandestine powers would be used to start corrupting the entire edifice of democracy and to guide us through a managed reality into frank totalitarianism, which is where we're going. So what would Trump have to do to convince me? Well, he would have to abolish the CIA. He needs to get rid of it. There should be, in my view, a constitutional amendment forbidding the spending of a single cent that is not fully auditable and immediately auditable. There should be no secrets, no secrets. The government is my government. It's my money they're spending. They shouldn't be able to keep any secrets from me. And the minute we allow that, that's when they start doing dirty stuff. Of course, they'll say that they need to do it to protect me. That's the excuse that every totalitarian always employs. But we should not believe that. We should never trust bureaucrats. We should always be very suspicious. Now, on Israel, what should Trump have to do in order to convince me? Well, he should support Israel winning the war. And that means liberating Gaza, liberating Lebanon, liberating Syria, liberating Iraq, liberating Iran, getting Egypt the hell out of the Sinai. Okay, so all of those things would have to happen. Trump would have to support all of that for me to be convinced that he's interested in Israeli security, because nothing short of that will make Israel secure. And that includes, by the way, I was forgetting, we have to expel PLO Fatah from Israel. PLO Fatah has no business inside Israel. As Edwin Black has documented, to the benefit of all Western society, PLO Fatah has a pay-for-slave program, as they now call it, which is paying ordinary Palestinians whenever they kill Jews. Whenever any Arab Palestinian kills the Jews, they get a lifetime salary from the Palestinian Authority, which means the economy of Arab Palestinians is structured around the murder of Jews. Those people have no business in the Jewish state. They have to be completely expelled. And I see no sign that Trump intends to do that. In fact, in his first term, in Trump 1.0, he was pushing the Saudi peace plan for PLO Fatah to get its state in Judea and Samaria. And I see no sign that he's going to support the total expulsion of PLO Fatah from Israel. But if he does all of these things, if he abolishes the CIA, if he supports Israel winning the regional war against its genocidal enemies and liberates the Middle East from the yoke of the oppressive jihadists to benefit not only the Jews, but all of the Arab Muslims living in that region, then that would convince me. That would convince me that I was wrong and that Edwin Black was right.
Okay. So now Edwin Francisco said that he would be convinced that Trump is the real thing and that you were right. If he were to abolish the CIA, and on Israel, if he would support Israel winning the war, like really winning the war by taking control of Gaza, of Judea and Samaria, and liberating them, no? Getting rid of these terrorist organizations, including PLO Fatah, also known as the Palestinian Authority, that's key points to ensure Israel security, and anything short of that doesn't really ensure Israel security. So if Trump were to fully support Israel on doing that, Francisco would have to say, Edwin, you were right, Trump is a real thing. So now, Edwin, what would have to happen for you to come back and say, well, Francisco, you were right, Trump was the same, wasn't
another
really
enemy.
And it's the same thing. It wasn't a real ally of Israel.
Well, first of all, there's a huge misunderstanding here. I never said that Trump was going to dismantle the CIA. He's not dismantling the CIA. What he's doing is he's depoliticizing it and taking the CIA out of the political intrigues and trying to manipulate the U.S. government. And that's being done by putting in his own disruptor. Notice that word disruptor, Radcliffe as head of CIA, and Tulsi Gabbard. Second, if the CIA is being redirected, I'm not sure if you know this, but 48 hours ago, the CIA began flying secret drones over Mexico, attempting to identify the location of the cartels. U.S. Special Forces are already on Mexican soil, working with Mexican Special Forces. And we'll see what happens as he continues to try to target the Mexican cartels. Now, it's important to understand that Trump is not a Democrat and Trump is not a Republican. Trump is not a conservative and Trump is not a liberal. He's not a progressive. I'll be honest with you. He's just Trump. The Republican Party is the Trump Party. All those Republicans are either been sidelined or in the or been expelled from the party. So Trump is unique. He's his own force of nature. Now, what would I like to see? What I would like to see is on three levels. One, the Israel level. Israel needs five things. And if it gets those five things, it will destroy the Iranian nuclear program. Those five things are approved and they're coming to Israel. It's not in one shipment of MK-82 bunker busters. It's a lot of stuff. And I will judge Trump by whether the U.S. supports Israel by doing a few things which I can't discuss, in taking down the Iranian nuclear establishment. And let's use the word weeks and months, not years, okay? Let's use the word weeks and months. We could even say days. Second, I need anti-Semitism in its most vile application let me go on the Israel point again. Israel must have its QME, that's the qualitative military edge, and that has been subverted by the Biden administration. Jew haters, stem to stern. I need to go back. This idea that Francisco gave about the CIA budget, the CIA budget, along with the NRO budget, National Reconnaissance Office, and NSA, is in a giant budget, the single largest budget line in the United States, and it's called the black budget. That means no one can see what's in it, okay? So the CIA must exist, and whether you call the CIA the OSS, the Office of Special Services, or whatever it is, the CIA must exist. But it must exist for the good of the American society and ipso facto for Israel and the Jews. That's been subverted and Trump is dismantling it. Tens of thousands, I'll say it again, tens of thousands of deep staters are being removed from the government, sometimes with 30 minutes notice. And this is happening hour to hour. It's not a prediction. It's happening hour to hour. In fact, they're actually going to audit Fort Knox to see if there's any gold in there, or just a bunch of pretty pictures. So that's on the CIA. on Israel. We need to see a solution where the Palestinians from Gaza are scattered to the winds and de-radicalized. And the Palestinian Authority is put asunder, and that means standing up to the EU and the corrupt UN. You'll have to schedule two more shows to discuss that. The third sphere is I need Trump to step up to the plate and pressure by means of tariff and other activity, monster anti-Semitism in Canada, South Africa, Australia, and many other places, so that we can not only say the Jews of Manhattan are safe to take the subway, but the Jews of Sydney and the Jews of Toronto are free to go to synagogue. Those will be the three spheres of judging him on the Jewish question. And everything else he's doing for the country is being applauded by an overwhelming majority of 60 to 70%. I understand that Francisco has knowledge, and the knowledge has burned, okay, his temples. But the fact is, I'm not patient, and I'm not gonna wait around. But what I'm seeing, hour to hour, proof in the pudding, tochas on tish, is that Trump is delivering for the Jews of the world, the Jews of the United States, and our chevra in Eretz Yisrael.
Edwin, we can't hear you.
Heard him. So just Edwin, to make sure I understood you correctly. What you're saying is Israel needs a very special shipment of something that's needed to attack Iran and destroy its nuclear facilities. They need US needs to support the disperse to scatter the people of Gaza and subvert and to deal with the Palestinian Authority. Another topic is Trump also needs to pressure by any means necessary, including tariffs, all these so-called Western countries like Canada and South Africa on their support or tolerance of anti-Semitism. And what you're saying is if Trump is not doesn't do these three things, then we can come back and revalue his position and if he's really doing what he promised.
He didn't clearly say that. The question was, what would...
I can't hear a thing, so I hope whatever Ricardo said was excellent.
Okay, but the question was, under what circumstances would you say, okay, Francisco was right, Trump was never a friend. Would happen?
Can you hear us there, Edwin?
He failed.
I don't think he can hear.
No, I think he lost audio.
Can you hear us now, Edwin? Yeah, he can't hear us.
I can't hear anything.
Okay. Well, we were nevertheless at the end of the show. It was great to have you guys on this great discussion. As we mentioned during the show, this was just a brief taste of the knowledge and all the information that these two greats have done for all the West and for all Jewish people to fight anti-Semitism. Please go and read Edwin, look at his show. Please go and read Francisco and look at all his videos and lectures. And let's keep on this fight against anti-Semitism. We welcome you guys to come on Thursday night at Mexico City to come to have this conversation live in person, where you can ask your questions. You, the audience, will be directing the conversation and the debate. It's a very special opportunity to have this grades together and have this conversation. All the information you can find in the description. Well, les quiero dar muchas gracias a todos los que nos escucharon, también a todos los que nos siguen. Por favor, compartir estos videos. Igual vamos a hacer la versión con subtítulos en español para todos los que tuvieron algún tema del idioma, para que sea mucho más fácil. El jueves tendremos eso solucionado con traducción simultánea mientras se va dando la conversación, para que eso no, el lenguaje no es una barrera, y nos encantará verlos el jueves. Igual les recordamos que nos sigan en todas nuestras redes, que compartan los videos, el curso del antisemitismo para entender todo el modelo de los problemas. Y pues muchas gracias por acompañarnos, y hay que seguir en esta lucha. Gracias a ustedes es que podemos seguir haciendo esto.